All right. Yo, welcome back.
We did it.
We're on iTunes. Thank you to the live band for that rousing introduction music. Every week you keep us going.
It's, you know, the SNL band manages to fit us in every week. It impresses me that they will make time for us.
Really, yeah. We're pretty gracious. Well, I mean, how about that? The Roots are the house band for Fallon.
I know.
And now Foo Fighters are doing a residency on, is it Letterman?
Is that true?
I think it started recently.
How much did they pay the Foo Fighters to do?
But how behind must... What, Letterman CBS, right? How behind must they feel that they're like...
Yeah, who are they...
Oh, well, we need a hip young band too. Who do the kids listen to these days?
The Spice Girls? No, well, the Foo Fighters.
I bet if someone had told them the Spice Girls were on the table, they would have A, believed them, and B, like, really strived to get them.
You
they
know would've... who would be an outstanding house band? Weird Al.
He would be. Because he would also be your Andy Richter character. He would stay around on the sidelines and hang out and crank wise.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he instead of Questlove's drum kit, it would be Weird Al in his accordion.
Yeah.
Well, if you've been watching Comedy Bang Bang, the whole point is to, like, fuck the talk show segment, you know?
Yeah.
And Reggie Watts is Weird Al in that role.
It's true. I guess Reggie Watts kind of would...
He's an amazing house band.
He's amazing. He's kind of my point, I guess.
Yeah. But you're
sadly.
Right. Like in the finale of that season of Louis, where Louis tries to get Letterman's job.
Yeah.
Imagine the show where Louis was hosting late night and Weird Al was the house band.
Yeah.
That would be.
It's a great lineup.
We can wish. There's a parallel universe where that's true.
Yeah. Oh, it's a better universe. PSH is still alive. Sadly, but.
Right?
Anyway.
All the celebrities we like are still alive. The ones we don't are dead and buried. I love that universe.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, welcome to the Scrutineers.
We're here.
This is the kind of...
grass is always greener with the Scrutineers.
The kind of searing commentary that you come to us for every week. Well, the internet can't seem to keep its dick in its pants.
Yeah, sadly, we managed to fuck up our ethical test that is the internet again. By way of whomever had the power to hacking Snapchat and was it Snap History, one of those databases where you could
archive. Right, that was the whole thing. Was that people,
correct me, please?
No, I don't know. I mean, I don't have the article in front of me, and I've never been on the site, so I don't know how it works. But it's a third-party Snapchat service that, like, it lets you use Snapchat on a web browser instead of your phone, so you can, like, emulate Snapchat services. So I guess it lets you save the photos and,
third-party
act like you're a user when you're not.
Right.
So that's why Snapchat was all defensive in their defense. In their statement.
A defensive defense.
Right, in their
opposed
statement.
Opposed the offensive offense.
Absolutely.
Things were right.
That
nothing
they were.
Was redundant.
Well, in their statement, everyone accused them of blaming the users, which I kind of did.
Mm-hmm.
Because they said... Well, you shouldn't be using third-party sites, and we told you not to in our terms of service that you agreed to, and I'm sure you totally read them. Which...
That's perfect.
Gosh. And first of all, like, again, aren't these people being victimized? The people who use this browser website, aren't they trying to trick people into giving them photos that they can then save? So how are you going to blame the users if they're victims?
Like, their primary existence is to provide a private... image sharing experience.
Right. This was that Wired editorial's
point.
Yeah.
Like, what is... You fucked
so
up.
So do you think the company has... It's their duty, right? To, like, educate their users and, like...
Yeah. I mean, it's their duty to keep things clear and let them know that this is the risk that could happen. But it's also... It's their duty to bust their ass to make sure it doesn't. Like, you have the money. You have... seed money, you have, I don't know, whatever the fuck you have in that world to protect yourself. And now, the vulnerability there is huge. And it creates it opens up the market for Vine to come back and steal all their people.
How much responsibility is on the user to educate themselves and not on the company to defend itself?
I mean, I think...
You know, like, if you're using Snapchat, like... How much thought should you put into it before you tweet someone your nutsack or something, hypothetically?
Realistically?
Dude, my Snapchat feed, by the way, my story stream, yesterday was existential cats. I had No one uses it. No one on my feed uses it for dicks.
When you started with that syllable of X, I was like, it was X-rated. Yesterday, I was just naked. My story.
For hours on my story.
Yeah.
Made sure my potential employers saw it.
It was a twat waddle Tuesday with Adam. It was
spread eagle Monday before that.
Yeah.
Absolutely follow me. On Snap. No, no, I'm saying, like, mine's so boring. I took photos of my cat and then made it.
Wet Knuckle Wednesday.
The best one. I don't know. I was pretty self-important and I thought it was fun doing fake philosophy. My favorite hobby is making my cat think more deep things than he thinks. There's no way he has an opinion on, you know, Boko Haram and existentialism. My favorite one that I snapped was...
Really, it's the artistic representation of your cat overlaid with images and
ponderous statements and really thought-provoking questions.
Right, that's what I'm saying. There's a lot.
Well, and like that's the thing is that apparently a lot of these photos that were hacked, a solid chunk of them were just mundanities and just boring.
Right.
Because that's what people use Snapchat for. And like no one gives a shit that I made my cat wonder about the nature of the soul.
Okay.
Like that's not here's funny unless context. You know me, you know?
Here's
like,
what I was thinking about. They said it was U.S., England and Sweden, I believe, were the three countries hacked. Think about how many boring people live in those three countries. Just white fucking cat people, dog people, stupid people.
How many just pictures of dinners did they get?
So you take the 99.9% of the bullshit in the world and then the 0.01% of the nude pics and you...
And like,
mix them all up and you drop them on some dude's WordPress site and you say, this is everybody. And people freak out and, you know, there's, I don't know, it's scary, but it's also...
I mean, it's definitely a breach of privacy, but this, compared to the last one, it does feel a little less like a big deal. But I don't know, is that because we gave the first one too much credence because it was celebrities? People steal photos all the time. People stand around subways... taking creep shots of strangers.
Okay.
But no one does anything because they're not celebrities. So, like,
when I heard about the first one, it was...
I don't know. What do you think, man?
Well, I guess it's just the way they presented to me were very different. I think when Jennifer Lawrence and Anna Kendrick and some of those big names that were involved...
Well, she actually wasn't. I think that was one of the things.
Yeah, okay. I mean,
because, like, she had a whole statement about how she was and she wasn't.
I didn't get very far into it, but when I heard the big names associated with that whole hacking, I was intrigued because of the big names. This was it was randos. It was no one. You weren't able to put together any sort of idea of where the pictures were coming from or whatever. So, and also it was presented to me by, more likely than not, if you're finding naked pictures, they could very well be child porn because there's no way to differentiate a 16-year-old Snapchat versus a 20-year-old Snapchat. So I was just like, nope, I'm done. Like, this isn't where I don't want to peruse this.
Yeah, this isn't the internet that we want right now. Like,
I like to, like, you know, do the things that I like to do on the internet.
Well, that's like the thing. I was reading this article that was a beginner's guide to the darknet, and it was like how to use Tor and like an onion network. Like, it was like House of Cards season 2, where the journalist falls down the spiral of the darknet and like that whole encrypted undernet that can't be indexed by search engines, you know?
Because it's out
like
there.
Like Silk Road and everything.
You think you know the internet? You have no idea.
Where do you get a load of this? No, but it was just this article that was like, a beginner was like, hey, I did it for an evening. I set it up myself. It was mad easy. I perused around and this is what I found. And he wrote a little article about it.
And then he was hacked and now he's no money.
Well, no, and one of the things he pointed out, and one of the things that you just said about the Snapchat is, like, you gotta be sure what you're clicking on. There's a good deal of it that you do not want to be associated with, and, like, clearly the powers that be are tagging these searches and looking at these IP addresses and shit, and, like, you just want to nope the fuck out of there if there's anything even questionable, you know?
Just think before you click is a very important
or snap in this case.
Yeah, well, I mean,
or tweet.
Take all the naked pictures you want, share them with, you know, your significant other, and do it the right way. But don't. I mean, actually, I can't. What am I saying? I don't know.
What's just the right way to do it is the thing.
Yeah, just don't.
There should be a right way to do it because
That's what I'm saying.
People should be allowed to express themselves.
We should not eliminate the idea of photography being erotic and sexual. But
well, there are idiot politicians trying to get laws like that on the books, and they're accidentally making it like illegal to take photographs of anyone at all or something.
But think about
you know, like they're writing the laws so wrong because they don't understand the technology or the terminology isn't caught up.
We just had a very good example of our conversation leading to broad strokes leading to terrible ramifications, right? We were talking about, you know, the need to protect ourselves from child pornography being hacked on the internet, and all of a sudden we're talking about basically making Playboy illegal. Like that's what happens when you try and legislate this shit. It's really complicated.
Like, yeah, they would accidentally make Skyping illegal in six states or something. Yeah, like,
you fuck everything up when you try and, you know, make these types of rules.
So what's the answer? I mean, is there a way to educate people on this stuff so they cannot hurt themselves on the internet?
It's hard because
we're not going to stop hackers, and like, I don't know. It would be great to live in a world where there wasn't catcalling, but a lot of people are pricks and you can't stop them. And like, it is in our society, and like, yeah, the society's fucked in that case, but at least it's not the Middle Ages with people raping each other all day, all the time. Right. So like, this is progress, but it's not perfect. So we can't imagine that there won't be hackers.
Mm-hmm.
So the only answer is to protect yourself
and
educate yourself on how to navigate the internet.
Ongoing education, because I think what's hard is because to protect yourself in the way that we just described, you have to be, you can't be stubborn, and you have to be open to the fact that if you're 60 years old or even 45 years old, there's a lot you need to learn from probably your 20 to 30-year-old son, nephew, whatever. So because there's a whole world out there that's sort of gonna, it's like a tidal wave that is sneaking up on you, and if you don't turn around and realize it, it's just gonna kind of, you're gonna drown. So it's a need to be aware.
That's what it comes down to. So this is a much more clear-headed and concise version of when the original fappening broke. We kind of covered this ground already.
Should we
put our rose-colored nostalgia sunglasses on
and
take a trip through memory lane?
Let's blow in our cartridge, if you will.
Oh my.
Yeah.
Get fire it up. Plug those controllers in. Do you remember those Nintendo heydays?
Yeah, well, I think I actually, in an earlier episode, I told you my Nintendo story that my mom bought my dad an original NES in like 83 when they were dating, and he was like, "Nope, don't give a shit." and then put it in the garage, and they got married and had me, and then in like 92 they were like, "Well, let's dust this thing off." So I was
maybe he'll like it.
Yeah, so I was playing like,
yeah, that's similar to how I got one.
Yeah,
because again, it was too old for me, but my brother had one. He's 7 years older than me, so he had one of these things. And when the Super NES came out, he re-upped and I got his old one.
Right.
So I had this relic in my house.
Whatever.
I mean, you did too. Anyway,
it worked.
What's going on? I mean, then they had that Game Boy. Do you remember that Game Boy?
I had an ice blue Game Boy.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't have one of those big gray bricks. Those ones that you can use to keep a door held open, you know?
Yeah.
That
was before us. That was like, I think we would have been too young for our parents to have bought that for us.
But I vividly remember the advertisements for Game Boy Pocket.
Yep.
They had teenagers on a conveyor belt. It was right around Christmas time. Well, when the ad aired, not in the ad.
Yeah.
The advertisement had teenagers on a conveyor belt, and there was a metal arm that just stuffed a Game Boy Pocket in their butt jean pocket.
For some reason, I imagine all the kids with bleached tips, because it was the 90s.
Because it was the 90s. They were all wearing double denim, and it was just a magical time.
Fred Durst made an impact on all of them. The Twin Towers still stood,
and it was just...
Yeah, well, that was then.
That was then.
Anyway.
Now we have the NSA.
Instead of the Super...
Instead of Nintendo USA.
Instead of SNES.
Right? The acronyms have gotten bleaker. I don't know. So that Game Boy, all these Game Boys and shit, like, how's it going now, though?
Right, but
what
do you think? I think we need to... There's another step in between before we get to now is, you know, it wasn't something that died in the 90s. We had an 64, was one of the greatest systems.
No, you're right. I'm skipping ahead several years because those are more lucid memories.
And we don't have to get into them too much, but again, we're talking about a company that was able to reinvent itself and innovate on pace and consistently with Xbox and Sega and outlasted.
Yeah, true. But I mean, if you think about it, just... They've been making consoles and video games. That's one category. Like, they haven't really branched out. They've done several things in that space. And they have had innovative technologies like these newest Game Boys, the newest portables that aren't Game Boys, they're called dual screens, the DS.
Yeah.
Like, dual screen, that's bonkers. Why does my handheld have two screens? And then you play with it and you're like, oh, that makes sense.
Right.
This is crazy fun technology. So, like, yeah, you're right. They do innovate, but, like, they haven't made a huge change recently. They were founded as a playing card company. Yeah. So they've always made games.
They make games.
But they went from analog to digital when they had to.
Mm-hmm.
And they make weird consoles that are unlike the other major consoles. The Wii is so different from an Xbox or a PlayStation.
Right.
The DS is so different from a PlayStation Portable and all that shit. Right. Because the DS has these unique capabilities. But I don't know. What do you think is going on nowadays?
I guess,
so like I said, do they need to do something crazy like that again?
Yeah.
Or like... change their audience? Because they really target kids.
Right, and they target kids and they target families.
I don't know. Anyway. Are you going to explain it or like, let's chat?
Yeah.
What do you think they can do?
I get it. And I think where I first see their biggest sort of barrier or where they're lagging behind is that PlayStation and Xbox have been... they've been aware of their consumer, and they know, and they've been able to sort of consistently give consumers what they want. Whereas Nintendo has taken more of the Macintosh or Apple approach, where they're sort of saying, "We're going to give you what you need," and that's slowly and surely driven the market away from them. And I think that's kind of what I've seen. But then I also look at the way that the systems have changed, and I think about how Xbox and PlayStation have become more like computers and less like game systems. My laptop.
Right, they're going for the whole living room, whereas Nintendo is still like, this is a diversion from the day. You are going to take a break and interact with a game.
Right.
But, like, it's interesting you compare them to Apple because, I mean, you read these articles. If you hand a kid a DS and an iPad, the kid's going to not know what to do with the DS. And an iPad, you can just fucking poke at it and do what it needs to do.
Right. It's so more like, intuitive.
That's the thing. What do you think that, like, okay, if Nintendo's shooting for kids, and kids don't even want their shit because they don't understand what they can do with it. I don't know. This isn't a marketing...
You're not applying for a job. We ruin kids. Kids are friggin', you know...
They don't know how to play with a toy when they see one.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess part of it is that the nature of what a child seeks out in an entertainment or a gaming system is a little different. And maybe Apple is an easier sell on the parents because a parent is so familiar with all the other Apple products that it makes sense to let their kid start playing with their iPad and then eventually...
To shut the kid the fuck up.
Right.
Have you seen a kid, like, shut up real quick in an airport or at a restaurant when they have an iPad or iPhone in their hand? Like, it's amazing. Instead of sitting your kid in front of the TV while you, like, I need to make dinner, the kid is underfoot, put him in front of the TV.
Right.
Now you can do that on the subway. Give the kid a Brick Breaker
game. But you
can
do that with
Game
Boy.
Or something.
I mean, the Game Boy was a more expensive investment, but instead of buying a $3 app, you could buy a $100 Game Boy. And that might be a big reason why people aren't buying Nintendo products anymore, is because they can just buy an app on their phone. Because
do you think people want, like, just one device that can do anything instead of, like, having a dedicated gaming device?
No, but not necessarily. I think that...
I mean, you're right. I have two devices.
Yeah.
But I want to keep up with Pokemon. Like,
any kid
who is just, like, needing to play the next game,
you're different.
Just download the app.
You're different than the target market I'm talking about. I'm talking about mom and dad.
Right, and I'm not the one that Nintendo's talking about either.
Right.
Because they've got me. They don't need to... court me.
And,
like, how, what the fuck are they gonna do?
And it's not like we're not talking about the massive, massive world of Nintendo nostalgia and love that exists for people who are 15 to 60. But that's a different story. What I'm talking about is the mom on the subway with a 6-year-old kid, and she's thinking, do I want to spend $200 to get the brand new Nintendo system, or do I want to get the app that's tied to the toy that my kid just got in the Happy Meal yesterday? Because all of that she can accomplish for $6, whereas the Nintendo system is $250.
You're right. It's an investment, and it's confusing if you don't know the industry and the way video games are marketed and configured and sold. Like,
yeah.
So, I don't know. I just think it's sad that I hope they get their shit together or, like, find some new weird way to do a new thing and make more money and stay afloat, because I don't want them to go anywhere. It would be gutting if Apple drove Nintendo under in some weird dystopian future in the darkest timeline, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, but think about it. It wouldn't be a matter of Nintendo or Apple being the sole sort of killer. It would be probably four or five different groups or companies that could innovate upon what Nintendo does well, taking away all their different areas of the markets. I mean, you have Xbox and PlayStation taking away your sort of big box console market. You have,
and maybe even your cable subscription,
right? But that wouldn't really affect this household anyway. How does that affect Nintendo though?
I mean, no, it doesn't. But I mean,
but again, it's a service that those are providing that Nintendo is not.
Right. It's an additional thing. Well, it's the same thing. Like any. You start out in one category. If you want to stay afloat, you have to branch out, right?
Right. You can't... I mean, Krispy Kreme filed bankruptcy exactly. because they only made one kind of donut.
Right. You know? And, like, Starbucks has stayed in the game because they don't just give you coffee. They make you sit down and have a sandwich, you know?
Even though their sandwiches suck.
Right. But they're there.
They're constantly... Well, as much as that, they're just constantly trying new shit to get you in the store.
Right, yeah.
That's what...
The coffee's there. But you're right. That rack always does change. It's not right. So anyway, there's always the point. You got to diversify. New
caffeinated gimmick.
And that's the thing too. I wouldn't even be mad at oil companies if they could diversify. I would be so fine if we've talked about this already, right? That if Exxon decided that they were going to make their money, they wanted to stay in the energy game, and they just put a bunch of money in windmills instead of. You know, if they made a bunch of windmills in the middle of the ocean instead of drilling places for oil, that'd be fine. I don't care what company does it. Just do it ethically, you know?
Right. I get it. Yeah.
So, like, that'd be a great way to diversify.
There's no reason a bad company couldn't start doing good. Like, I'm totally open to changing my opinion of the Coke.
You hear that, Exxon?
Yeah.
We would love to make a faceless corporation marketable. So give us a shout out. You can find us at scrutineers.wordpress.dsnuts. And we'd love to hear from you. We'll have our we've got two or three interns hard at work.
Yep.
Steffi, combing Jeffy, through the resumes and things.
Danny Tanner, the Olsen twins, but yeah,
they're all here.
Yeah,
working tirelessly.
Yep. Anyway,
any hoozle.
So big news, really the biggest news, some of the biggest news we've ever actually been able to share on the show. Inspirational figure, future world leader, artisan. chef and bearded man Dan Harmon was in town, and he happened to cross paths with my co-host, your voice that puts you to bed each night, Adam Loria. And personally, you know, Adam hasn't really told me the whole spiel. He's just sort of posted some pictures.
Wow. Well, this wasn't the intro I was gonna give, but that's not bad at all.
I just kind of wanted to
attributed the man a little bit. I don't know how much chefing he does.
Oh, I don't know. But fucking the man can cook. Puts toast in the toaster. Or bread in the toaster. That's cooking. And I imagine
it's a good morning.
I imagine he's keeping himself full. So, you know, whether or not it's seamless or delivery or whatever, just he can cook. Anyway, Adam, so, how'd you meet him?
Okay, Dan Harmon was in town for a bunch of events, and I went to two of them. They were over the weekend. He has a podcast called Harmontown. He started it when they fired him from Community at the end of season 3. He took the podcast on tour after it got a little popular across the country. Made a documentary of that tour. Gotcha? So that's the context. I went to a screening of a documentary about a tour of a podcast.
That's awesome.
That was Saturday afternoon. Dan Harmon and the documentarian...
There's a hole in the wall on the bottom of the sea. Anyway, go on.
The director of the movie, Neil Berkeley, and Dan Harmon did a Q&A at the end of the screening, and then a little meet and greet with Dan Harmon in the front of the lobby of the building,
yeah,
the IFC Center where the theater was.
I love that place. But
yeah, really cool spot. It was really fun.
Go there. So,
yes, go support them. They do really cool events. So anyway, I just basically hung around till the bitter end of the meet and greet, and there was already a fan who he's interacted with several times over the years. She runs a blog devoted to him called havingchanged.tumblr.com. So he had already agreed to take her out to drinks and hang out. And then me and another guy, it ended up being the three of us, the three fans, plus Dan and Neil and a couple employees of the IFC. We went to this bar around the corner and chatted and hung out. And the evening just went on. Everyone was just enjoying each other's company and asking and answering all these insightful questions, and it just went into I don't know. It lasted hours. We went to another bar, and then shit got a little rowdier at the second bar. And it was a really fun and intriguing night, yeah.
Okay. Well, before we get rowdy, I'm right now.
It was a crazy story, honestly. No, it's amazing. I'm so lucky. I still can't believe it. It's just, he's such a major guy to treat his fans that way.
Yeah, and you're like, such a big fan. But it's nice that you saw him and not some fucking kid who wandered in there by accident and was like, hey, I look like Ashton Kutcher by accident. Can I hang out with you? And Dan Harmon just happens to, like, you know, make him his best friend and put him in a movie. You actually fucking appreciated him. And, like, asked him cool questions. So my first area of interest about your story is that sort of question and answer session. Can you enlighten me a little bit or give me some sort of insight? Like, what was the highlight of that? Or what was something that you really would think would be cool to talk about?
From the actual film and the Q&A session?
No, from talking to him, like, in person. Like, when things...
Oh, from hanging out at the bar with him?
Yeah. I don't, you know, he said fucking, you know, whatever to the...
Because I didn't actually, like, take the mic during the actual film screening event. No,
he didn't know you before the night started.
Correct.
Yeah.
But anyway. No, well...
So, like, when the beers were flowing or whatever, you guys just hanging out. Like, what was up?
Well, the type of shit we talked about is the kind of stuff, if you're familiar with Community and Rick and Morty... The kind of shit we talk about is the kind of shit he jokes about on his shows. Like, the shit that he makes jokes about is the stuff that's top of mind. Like, how to talk about race without being racist was one of the things we talked about.
Yeah.
Shit like that. Like, the marginalized voices of society getting a voice, like, handicapped folks, or just geeky folks in general.
Sure.
And then, like, so we would be talking about this kind of shit, or, like, gender politics and, like, even, I don't know, shit like that.
Yeah.
You know, so not, like, a little bit of weighty issues, and, like, one of the things we mentioned a few times is the way people are so eager to be offended, and the way people, like, police racism, that kind of shit. And, like, when you watch Community and Rick and Morty, you notice that, like, those are the kind of jokes that stand out. And, like, this is who he is. These are his sensibilities.
Uh-huh.
And, like, I don't know, little details that I noticed that were really fun. Like, the drunk stammering that Rick exhibits on Rick and Morty. I don't know. I kind of do it on the show a little bit, and Dan does it when he's in his cups as well.
That's funny.
It is totally funny. And I'm sure, you know, Justin Roiland, who voices Rick and Morty, I'm sure he does it too. That's why
he probably hung out with
so well. With Dan, I don't know how he can just talk through belches like that.
Yeah.
It's impressive voice acting.
He's a professional. I mean, give him some credit.
Don't try this at home, folks.
This is why they pay him the big bucks.
So no, Dan is just the most real dude, and, like, I don't know. His whole thing is, like, honesty, and that's what the documentary and the podcast are about, too, is just being honest and tapping in your feelings and being all that. And it gets him into trouble.
Right.
And as it would everyone, but that's you can at least rest your head on your pillow at night feeling good, you know? So, I guess those are some of the biggest takeaways. It was really crazy. It was really unreal.
Yeah. Did you ever get any insights, like, kind of fun facts? Like, did he have, like, a favorite animal or a show? Shows he's watching, like,
some fan asked him a lot of, he had a long discussion with a fan outside the theater about Minecraft.
Okay.
And it was really cool. They were just using words that I could not spell, had never heard before.
Shout out to Minecraft fans out there,
for sure.
Subscribe
a lot of you are grown adults.
Follow us for more Minecraft fun.
But I mean, it would be like if I tried to have a conversation with a sexually active grown adult about Skyrim. Like, they would not know the fucking words that are coming out of my head because they're nonsense. It's fantasy. It's fantasy talk, you know what I'm saying?
The way you bring
it
up.
So, like, Minecraft, I didn't understand a word he was saying, but he and his fan were so into it, it was really cool to watch.
Right.
And he even said, like, I haven't gotten to use gibberish talk like this since talking about Dungeons and Dragons when I was 12.
Right.
Because that's exactly what it was.
Brings out the best.
Fantasy language.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, I don't know. He plays Minecraft and he likes Iron Man more than Batman. Shit like that.
Cool. Like the movies? Like he liked the Christmas?
No, I think the character more. Just like, you know, Batman is, when you get down to it, a rich guy who plays with martial arts.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know. I guess Iron Man's a rich guy too. Maybe I was daydreaming when he was talking to someone else about that specific superhero question.
Iron Man kind of creates his own shit, whereas
Batman true.
Kind of just like...
He just buys it. He just buys shit that the military doesn't work. Exactly. Yeah. So, Yeah, again, that was a little bit of the Q&A sesh. Because that's the kind of shit people... I don't know. But I don't know. This is, I guess, one of the reasons I'm not a journalist who interviews celebrities, because...
No, you're a podcaster.
Who makes
podcaster by blood.
Podcaster by choice. No, but I mean, like, you don't want a shitty interview. And the questions that some people ask when you, like, read a Reddit AMA or go to a Q&A... And you ask a celebrity about other celebrities, like, hey, great to meet you. What can you tell me? What was it like working with this other, totally other person who's not here in the room?
Right.
Like, I don't know. That seems like you're here to talk about this person's career, you know?
Yeah.
So, or like, what's your favorite dessert? Like, look that up in some local small town interview he did years ago if you really care about him, right. You know?
I get your point. I mean, I guess part of me, I love
to not that favorite superhero isn't important.
No.
I checked out.
And again,
a little bit, I guess.
I was just making words come out of my mouth.
Also, not that I'm so high and mighty. That
no, I know.
I need flighty conversation all the time.
You're on my level. You're not floating like Buddha or anything. But I guess I love to humanize the celebrities that I cherish the most. Like, for example, Kevin Smith. Like, I feel like, yeah, the DVD. Like, okay, when he went around,
that's the thing. These guys humanize themselves already by just being honest and answering questions in public.
And that's... I think what happens
and having active Twitter accounts.
Yeah.
That's important.
Oh, that's important too. But I guess part of me just... It's hard because you want... Especially if you were to meet them in person, you sort of want to give back in a way that you really can't.
I've met Kevin Smith too, you know.
Oh, yeah. I know. And I've met him... I've never met him, but I've seen him in person.
He didn't buy me drinks and I didn't bring him a joint or anything. But we did shake hands and he signed a book and...
He's
a solid gold chap. You know what I'm saying?
Here. He's on our scrutineers scrutinizing, scrutin wall of fame. It's a scrutin wall.
That's pretty.
There's
coherent.
No wall.
Pretty coherent, bro.
Yeah. Thanks. I just, you know, Kevin Smith's always someone we've both looked up to. But that being said, you know, I think when you meet someone like that, you really want to like emote in a way where you're saying like, I appreciate you and I think your work's amazing and blah, 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 where you end up kind of coming off like a fanboy no matter what. And it's hard and it's impressive.
Well, I mean,
I
hope I didn't come off. I hope I came off as a real person, not a fanboy.
But I guess that's what's hard is, you know, and why I'm impressed by your story is that he seemed to enjoy your company and want to keep you around because he liked conversation with you, or at least he, you know, you were giving
I hope so.
Vibes or whatever.
I mean, he
cool.
was polite on Twitter to me. He didn't blow me off the next morning when I thanked him publicly, so that's nice.
Yeah.
He's a major dude. That's what I'm saying. But, like, I mean, you and I, we're studied in media. We've taken classes in, like, media effects and branding and shit.
Sure.
So, like, it was cool to talk to someone well-versed in the creative side of the television industry.
Right.
Because, like... Earlier, like, the very first thing we talked about on the podcast was, like, the difference between NBC and CBS. And me and Dan Harmon talked about that at length. And he's the kind of dude who, when he starts talking, everyone around him shuts the fuck up and listens.
Absolutely.
So, like, I prompted him by saying, like, this is a discussion that a professor had in college in this class I took. Actually, on the study abroad program we had, the professor was telling us that people don't have brand loyalty to television networks and networks don't have brand identities. And I refuted him, and I said that NBC has shows that I think are more intellectually stimulating, like, for that, was it one season or two seasons where it was Parks and Rec, 30 Rock, The Office, and Community all at once?
That.
Like,
the stars aligned.
But they are a higher caliber show, and I do think that the different brands, or different qualities, you know, blah, blah, blah. There are different brands, the marketing, it applies to networks, and... Dan expounded on that for a while, and it was very cool to listen to his take on it. And he got into a little bit of the history of the three major broadcast networks and how they have kind of accidentally branded themselves based on the shows they pick up. So, like, it's an ongoing... It's, again, one of these really hyper-specific media theory academic class.
But it's something
you've
thought
about.
You know what I mean? That's cool, but there's something that's been in your head and you've churned on it for a while and it's kind of been baked in your oven.
Right, that's true. This
and
is clearly a conversation I've had for a few years.
Right, and you get to sort of bring Dan Harmon in on the fucking conversation. That's,
right, what is this?
That's dope. You know what I mean?
It was a major, major evening. It was huge. It was really fun.
That's awesome. And you know what I mean? I think that's all you can really hope for is the opportunity... Especially if you look up to someone like that, is the opportunity to fucking shoot the shit for them and not feel like you got too nervous. Because I feel like, okay, funny story. My dad's office got tickets to the Patriots game when I was probably in ninth grade, and
excellent.
It was awesome. You know, fun times. But we got to go on the field for that one game because one game a year, everyone who got the company seats got escorted on the field to watch pregame for like 10 minutes. Walk down.
That's exciting though. Yeah. For a 9-year-old max. That's
ninth grade. So yeah, I knew. I was aware. I was like, this is awesome. Go down.
I was aware.
Yeah, you know, I was like, this is.
Dude, 9-year-olds are pretty with it. They're conscious. But most of them aren't like drugged out or anything.
Let's hope. But anyway, do you know where your kids are right now?
Right, these fifth graders, all lithiumed and like spaced out.
Yeah. Well,
anyway, I tell you, we gotta stop medicating these kids.
Free them. Anyway, back to the story. I get down to the field. I give high fives to the refs, a couple players, great experience. Who's singing the national anthem? Dropkick Murphys. Who's my favorite band at the time?
Dropkick Murphys.
Who gets on the? You know, so obviously we.
Have you heard their cover of Tessie? Boston Red Sox song.
Yeah, of course.
I'm not even a Sox fan, and that song kicks ass when they do
they
it.
They play it at.
They play it at Fenway.
It's like the Red Sox song now. But anyway,
Royal Rooters rally cry.
Yeah, that's a great fucking song. Go see him in St. Patty for that week during St. Patty's Day. Anyway, so I get on. I'm like. You know, we have the experience on the field. It's over. We're going back to our seats. And after the national anthem, who's going back to their seats and gets in the same elevator? Dropkick Murphys. So it's me, my brother, the other kids that got to go down in the field from my dad's from the seats my dad's office had.
And
Dropkick
fucking Murphys.
And me as a ninth grade fucking pubescent little bitch.
That's peak Dropkick Murphys listening time.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't say anything. And my little brother, who at the time was like a fucking sixth grader, just like, hi, Dropkick Murphys, like some stupid bullshit like that. And I'm just like,
don't embarrass me in front of Dropkick.
No, I wasn't even like that. I was literally shaking in my boots. I couldn't say a word. I was just like, this is the band. Like, you know what I mean? I spent a lot of time alone in my room just screaming their song. Not like in like a... Goth,
dude, that album, Blackout.
But just like, I just love that music.
2004, dude.
Yeah.
It was a good year for alt-punk pop-punk or whatever.
And they sang the national anthem with the Patriots. I'm sure they've done it since, but I was this far, like I was six
inches. Sharing an elevator.
Yeah, sharing an elevator with them. So, I don't know. There are times when you can meet people you really look up to and you just fucking choke.
That's true. So, and I mean, to be honest, I... was a nervous, shaky little...
Yeah.
I mean, it is nerve-wracking to see any famous person, sure. I think. Especially if you have to, like... I don't know. I was nervous a little bit when I met Kevin Smith, too. Like, just...
But that was a more... Wasn't that in, like, a book signing?
Well, yeah, but it was still, like, shake his hand, meet him for a second, get a photo, ask a question, like, interact with him, and, like, physically touch him. But I don't know. Then after waiting around and, like, listening to Dan, and it was just... He's so easy to fucking talk to and just be near in a circle, you know?
Well, yeah, and I think about, like, I feel like a lot of those people, they love to talk, you know what I mean? Like, Dan Harmon makes himself accessible. Kevin Smith makes himself accessible. Bill Simmons, when he's not suspended, makes himself accessible because he just likes to talk. Oh, yeah,
his suspension must be over soon. Right?
It ended this week. Tonight, actually, at midnight, he's going to be... He does a NBA prediction series. He does, like, a little preview thing where he releases a bunch of digital videos from Grantland. Yeah, last year he'd do this thing. It would have kind of sketches in it. It would be kind of silly.
Sounds cool. So by the time this airs, our audience will be able to catch up on this Bill Simmons, our hero over here.
Bill Simmons' voice will be back in talking, because it's interesting. He's basically been taunting people and I don't know who he's taunting, but he's just been posting Instagram photos of him golfing, getting his hands manicured, his toes massaged, hanging out with Jimmy Kimmel, like just living the life. So he's been on vacation.
Good. He deserves to enjoy his suspension.
Yeah, don't cry for Bill Simmons.
Good.
But do listen to his future content.
Oh yeah, we will celebrate when he's back on the air. Can we close out this episode with one real quick anecdote from this Saturday night I still can't believe even happened?
Yes.
So, like I said, I don't know if raucous is the right word, but we went to the second bar, and there was another group of people who had been at the screening hanging out at this bar, and, like, they had run into us at the first bar, and they said, Dan and crew, we're going to the second bar, you guys should meet us there, and so that's what we did. and this other group of people from the screening were there. It at one point in the evening, four girls got up on the bar and were dancing. It was a fucking Coyote Ugly topless? Joke. Not topless, but shoes on the bar.
A boy can dream.
Yeah, well, again, in this parallel universe that we were longing for, that's how this story went down.
Anyway, back to the real story.
It was a funny, amusing, drunken, one in the morning type event. And yes. A chunk of time later, you know, however many drinks later, the director of this Harmontown podcast, Neil Berkeley, was joking that wouldn't it be funny if we got on the bar or I got on the bar. So, of course, it took me, like, no prodding for me to stand up on the bar and start dancing.
Yeah.
And I did about a 5 or 7 second dance before not one but two bouncers told me to get the fuck down. And I did get down, but then they tried to kick me out, and I defended myself. And I don't know how much Neil or Dan were like, yo, this kid's with us, and, like, pulled their weight.
Yeah.
I don't know if they had to or if the bouncers realized they were being jerks. But I called the bouncers out. I said they were being sexist. I said, you let four girls do this, like, 15 minutes ago, and you're not going to let a schlubby white dude up there to do it? And they ended up letting me stay. It was a pretty amazing night.
I'm glad it worked out, because that would have been
a joke like that could go awry, but this was pretty awesome. So I got to
It
was my night.
Yeah.
I got to, kick it with a pretty major TV writer. One of the more brilliant voices with a microphone out there. And then not get kicked out of a bar after behaving totally inappropriately. So it was a pretty good night, all told.
All told.
And I hope you guys enjoyed hearing about it back at home. Thanks for keeping up with us.
And scrutinize and...
Yeah, stay scrutiny.
I don't know if any of that will become an ongoing thing we say, but we appreciate you listening. And
we won't beat you over to the head with a catchphrase until
we
subscribe
on
really
iTunes. Subscribe on iTunes. And,
it's true.
And rate us 5 stars.
It's true.
Do all those things because, you know, this is where it begins. The future is now. Scrutinize with us.
See you next week, ladies and germs.
Bye.